Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Queer Mountaineers. I'm your host, Kayla Gagnon. This week's episode, I sat down with Rajon Staunton. He is a queer black poet from Beckley, West Virginia, and he's a student at Marshall University. We had a great conversation on community through literacy, as well as queer representation through a black lens. He also read some of his poetry during the recording, and I can't wait for you all to hear it. Now, let's hear from Rajon.
Absolutely. I'm Rajon Staunton. I'm 19. I live in Beckley, West Virginia. I go to Marshall University, where I major in creative writing and literary studies. And I am a self-proclaimed poet.
Yay! That's awesome. That's so cool. So when it comes to writing poetry and getting into creative writing, how did you get into that?
I didn't actually start creative writing until I got to college and had my first, it was like a gen ed course, basically, but it introduced me to creative writing, and it was creative nonfiction. And I realized how freeing just writing down your own story was, learning how to tell your own story. So it kind of drew me more towards creative writing. I didn't declare a major in it until my sophomore year. So I think it's been a pretty long journey to discovering poetry specifically, but me and creative writing got along pretty well just off the bat.
Was there another thing that you were interested in majoring before creative writing came up and claimed you?
Yes, I was actually a political science major, which I quickly realized was not really for me. A lot of very, I don't want to say targeted research, but it's just not as free-flowing and fluid as creative writing, I guess. But I was a political science major. I went to go to law school, the whole nine. But then creative writing really just said, here's this, and it's your life now.
Yeah, so you said sophomore, so what year are you now?
I am a senior.
Yeah, me too. That's so exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so where do you see yourself taking this major and this experience you've gotten from school?
I definitely want to get a master's degree. I don't know specifically in poetry or what yet, but I want to continue writing. I feel like language is a good way to reach people. So I hope to eventually run a publishing house or a magazine aimed towards writers of color, black writers, queer writers, the whole nine. I think that using words is a good way to get your message out there, tell your story with your own voice.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we talked about before we went on together is you wanted to talk about community, finding community through the written word. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So especially here recently with all the reading lists coming out, it's anti-racism reading lists, and they're very intersectional, anti-racism and LGBTQ reading lists. That kind of got me thinking about how we find bonds in other people through what we read and through what we write. Because you might read The New Jim Crow, but you're, just a white person in America, but it helps you kind of empathize with another experience you haven't had. So I feel like community through literacy is really easily achieved, especially in times like this, where we're all kind of in our own little bubbles and kind of reaching for ways to branch out to other people. And I really find myself even still reaching for different communities through what I read, because I'll read a book, tweet about it, and people come in my DMs and discuss the book, and it just kind of feels found a community that quickly through something so simple as books.
These times is that even more so we're able to find talk about quarantine here, but we're able to really kind of lean on those little communities that we found, these fandoms that we find within our favorite books. So I've been finding all sorts of Facebook groups for that. It's been great. The only problem is everyone else is way further ahead of me because the last season just dropped a couple of weeks ago. So I'm a little bit behind, and I've been mildly spoiled. So it's okay.
Yeah, that's the only thing about TV communities, especially, is the spoilers are just rampant, especially even in literature. A book will come out and I'll just be scrolling through Twitter, and then somebody will tweet something about this book, and I'm like, that was a pretty big plot point, They probably didn't say that just quite yet.
That sucks. Why can't people just honor, the rule they had when, the last Avengers movie came out, and I was no one tweet anything for 2 weeks,
Right, that's an ample viewing period, ample reading period. That's the no spoiler zone for sure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's so cool to see, we were talking about, we mentioned anti-racism resources, kind of becoming popular discussion points on social media. Like, I just saw that the New York Times best-selling list considered consisted of like a bunch of different like anti-racism reading. I cannot think of one right now. It's been a while since I saw that picture, but it was so cool to see this kind of, you know, titles listed for popular books.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, even just like my personal shopping for books, I tried to buy like Angela Davis's like Are Prisons Obsolete, and nowhere has copies right now. Like, everyone is really investing in like looking into abolition and other justice movements that were kind of brushed aside earlier in history. I think it's really exciting to see that, like, even though, you know, I'm frustrated because, like, I can't get the book myself, but others are getting these resources and wanting to learn. I think that's really the most exciting part about it.
I think I've seen a PDF of that book somewhere. I just can't remember where, but I think I've found the PDF. I don't know if I bookmarked it, but if I found it, I'll send it to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I mean, it's pretty incredible, like, how much, like, social justice discussion has, like, ramped up in the last couple of weeks with these, like, anti-racism books and documentaries too. Like, I just watched 13th, Ava DuVernay's documentary. I watched that for the first time when I was in high school, and like completely, like, you know, totally changed my perspective on everything.
Yes, and especially now, like in these times, even has more importance. And I think, like, if I would rewatch it now, it would hold a whole different message than it did when I first watched it, for sure. Like, it would resonate completely differently.
Yeah, absolutely. And seeing all these other like documentaries getting attention, like The Death and Life of Marsha P. Johnson, for instance, getting some attention. You know, I watched that a little while ago, but, you know, I'm always due for a rewatch, right?
Exactly. One of my favorite documentaries ever is Paris is Burning, which unfortunately is anymore.
That makes me so sad.
I know. It's so sad. It's amazing. Like, it's the best. I think it's a hallmark of documentary filmmaking, honestly. It's amazing.
Absolutely. And I mean, like, without Paris is Burning, there wouldn't be like Pose, for instance, and season 2 just got on Netflix, which I am so excited to watch.
Yes. It's amazing. Don't get ready for mid-season. It's a tearjerker. Just
I already cried 3 times on season 1 though. I don't cry over things.
Right. Me either.
Like, I mean, I just cried over She-Ra season 1. And then I cried over Pose. That's just me. I cry over shit now. That's just who I am now, I guess.
I love that. And this will definitely do it to you. These times we're living in are pretty emotional times, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's kind of nice to, you know, I'm not saying, like, it's not really a distraction if we're watching shows like these, because, right, like, you know, these are a lot of the issues, like, bringing up, like, on Pose, like, you know, with transphobia and racism, you know, yes, intertwining. And unfortunately, there's been like a couple more trans people who have been murdered in the last couple of weeks, which is just horrible. But it's so revolutionary seeing Pose with all of these Black trans and, you know, Latinx actors, you know. Yes.
It's revolutionary almost, like, in its own right, you know, like, media has its own revolution to happen separate from what's happening on the streets. And I think Pose is a really good starting place, for sure.
I mean, they just got the first Black man on The Bachelor, so.
Exactly. So we're making strides, you know?
Some strides, you know, a little bit. Yeah,
that's right.
Now, I don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race anymore, but, like, if Shea Coulee wins All Stars 5, that will be great, you know?
Right. That will be a redemption arc, for sure.
Absolutely. We got Jada Essence Hall winning season 12. Like, if we get Shea Coulee winning All Stars, like, that's just, like, monumental for right now.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race anymore because of transphobia. I just watch, like, the highlights that everyone else posts on Twitter. So it's like, I don't give them any money, but I still know what's going on. Oh my goodness. Let's see. So when you're writing, what are some of the things that you enjoy writing about in your poetry and other things that you create?
Well, I'm always, like, taking in the world around me, and I write about my family a lot because I guess that's just, like, is who most immediately, like, is around me. So my family is all of my poetry, my home, what I consider my home. The idea of even what is a home is questioned a lot in my poems. I'm always in conversation with, like, identity, intersectionality, me living as, like, a Black queer man in West Virginia, which is just an experience in itself, a whole range of poems in itself. So all of those things kind of come up in every poem, and I think part of my writing process is learning how to distill out what needs to be there and what doesn't. And then that's how I come out on the other side, like, my refined themes of poetry. But everything tends to come up at once because it's all related.
Yeah, like this, you know, issues that affect, like, you know, Black people, affects LGBTQ people, affects, you know, that kind of, you know, intersections.
Right. Exactly. It's a chain reaction, the whole thing, all the intersections.
Yeah. So with your poetry, I remember I've read two of your poems, and, you know, obviously on the last time we spoke, we, you know, heard some of your poetry. I remember you brought up Moonlight in one of your poems. Clearly that movie meant a lot to you.
Yes, Moonlight is my favorite movie ever made. It was honestly life-changing for me. I don't say that lightly either, like extremely life-changing, eye-opening even, to like the power of filmmaking. It really just like shook me to my core for some reason. And it really like really changed my life, actually. It's in a lot of my poems. For sure. Well,
I mean, like, I haven't seen Moonlight yet, but it's on Hulu, so now I need to watch it. So yes. I'm gonna go watch it when we get the chance later. But like, you know, Moonlight is another revolutionary piece of, you know, filmmaking. You know, it was the first LGBTQ film to win an Oscar, and it was the first, right, you know, Black, you know, like Black, mostly Black, pretty much all Black cast to win,
exactly,
an Oscar for Best Picture. Like, that's incredible.
Exactly. And I'm a big reader of, like, of Toni Morrison, so she talks a lot about, like, not having the white gaze in her literary spaces, because that's where she feels like Black people can be free. And I saw that movie, and it really made me think, like, wow, like, she was onto something, you know? Like, this is a film free from the white gaze, and it's full of Black joy and Black pain, and it's complicated, and it's everything that white artists thought Black art couldn't be until it became it. So I think it's just, no other film can come behind it, I don't think, and ever have, like, that much of an impact, but it definitely changed how we started watching movies, for sure, and how, yeah, we considered movies, like, cultural landmarks.
And now that, like, you know, when Moonlight won the Best Picture, now the memes are gone of, like, you know, the fiasco that happened with the Best Picture announcement, you know, right, now that it's faded, people can act, like, all the memes and the jokes about that can, like, fade, exactly, away, and now we can actually absorb the impact of,
right,
that movie.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And with, so with your writing career, do you have an idea, of what you'd like to do with it? Is this a, oh, I already talked about this. I'm a mess. I'm sorry. But do you think you'll stay in West Virginia when, you know, you finish your schooling and all that stuff?
I don't know if I'll stay, but I'd like to come back eventually. I have a lot of family here. This place, no matter how much I don't like to admit it, obviously means a lot to me. You know, it's everywhere in my poetry, everywhere in my writing in general. So I hope that my writing career eventually leads me back here, you know, maybe not permanently, but just for some opportunity for something like that. But I love big city life. That's just all me. I'm in New York, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia kind of person all day. So West Virginia is just a little too small, but I always will hold a place for it in my heart, for sure.
Yeah. And you're from Beckley, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Southern.
Yeah. Very, very Southern. That's, I mean, I think they didn't they just pass an LGBTQ anti-discrimination ordinance there?
Yeah, in Beckley. Yep, last year.
It's so exciting.
Yes.
Now if we have that all around the state, you know, like a statewide.
Yeah, that would be amazing. You know, I feel like that should be the next mission for sure, because everywhere could benefit. That's something, like, I think, like, even the ordinance, like, that comes back to, like, how words change communities. You know, that wasn't really a thing into, like, Facebook posts and blog posts and councilmen started writing about it. And it's, like, seeing it written and seeing who it helps and how it helps changes things, I think. And that's where, like, where lawmakers kind of get lost even now. Like, their language isn't clear and doesn't seem to be, like, accessible. So they kind of lose people. So I think that the non-discrimination ordinance was an example of what I'm saying about, like, language forming community, for sure.
Yeah, well, I remember, like, well, in examples of, like, confusing information when it comes to, like, lawmaking, yeah, when Amendment 1, for instance, that, like, that whole anti-abortion, like, addition to the state constitution, that was extremely confusing on the wording, and I think a lot of people voted for something that they didn't want to vote for.
Like, they didn't know what it meant. They had no clue what they were even reading, really. I mean, it was a really big accessibility issue in government at that point.
Yeah. So that's why we need, like, good writers in law, you know, in office.
Exactly. Exactly. More English majors.
Yeah, absolutely. That's people, I mean, people should not underestimate, like, the power of, like, you know, like, literature and studying the arts and stuff. Like, people like to brush that crap aside. I can't believe that.
No, it's kind of breathtaking. Like, when I was in high school, I was a major science kid, never really wanted to be an English major, got to college, said, okay, words are more for me. But then once I became an English major, it really became clear, like, words are where it's at. You know, they change everything. They really have all the power here.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of, like, the power of words, you know, social media has been keeping people, like, as what's been informing me about, like, about books like Angela Davis's, you know, book on prison abolition, mm-hmm. and, like, you know, white fragility and things like that. Like, a lot of these terms, I mean, I've heard some of these terms in women and gender studies classes, but people who aren't women and gender studies minors or majors, like, you're getting educated on social media right now.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you can't even help it. It's just, you log on and there's, like, article after article just, like, feeding you information. And people who aren't taking advantage right now are just, I don't know, they must not want to know. Because it's definitely all there right now. It's accessible and it's open. You know, you can definitely start fighting the good fight just by educating yourself.
I mean, there's also, like, with a lot of people aren't able to go to these protests because, like, they might have, like, might live with immunocompromised people. They might have, like, a disability of their own that prevents them from, you know, going out in the streets. And then, of course, you know, there's some danger because of how the police have been responding to some of these protests. But, you know, there's digital activism, which is something that really wouldn't exist 20 years ago.
No, not even close. I think the digital age has definitely helped things move along, because, like, even a week ago, like, the talk of abolishing prisons, abolishing police forces, defunding police forces was, like, as radical as you could get. And now, like, everybody is talking about shutting down prisons, shutting down police forces, calling for, like, community health aides. And, like, I just think that's amazing. Like, like social media has really done a service here in advocating for radical change in all avenues.
I remember, like, in one of my classes I just took this past semester, you know, like, Gutenberg and the printing press, you know, that's mm-hmm. a revolution of information right there. We are going through a second information revolution right now. Absolutely. Like, absolutely. Without a doubt.
Like, no one has a choice but to be transparent right now. You know, everything's laid out there for sure.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember seeing some of people on social media, like, talking about, like, because, you know, right now it is Pride Month and these protests are going on, and people are saying that, like, you know, Pride isn't canceled, we decided to go do the old-fashioned way this year.
Yes, and I love the old-fashioned way. It gets things done, you know, there's change happening because the old-fashioned way. And I think that's, like, a big part of, especially now, where we see, like, this influx of, like, public killings of trans women and just trans people in general. Tony McDade, even, starting back with that, it's just, like, you have to really go back to your roots to really get to the spirit of Pride. And the roots of Pride are in women of color, trans women of color, sex workers, Black women, Black lesbians. Like, you have to really go back to your roots and protect the roots. You know, like, even in modern days, we can't discount how women are affecting the movement. I just think it's monumental to see that, like, so many people are trying to go back to old school Pride. And I just really love it.
Yeah, I think with, like, I mean, last year, I remember there was a lot of debate on social media about, like, the police's role in Pride events, which shouldn't be a role.
Yeah, is it one?
And also corporation, like, you know, relationships with Pride. Like, I remember going to Pittsburgh for Pride last year, and I went to the one the Delta Foundation was hosting, and, like, you know, I was happy for the first few floats, and I started seeing Walmart,
right,
Uber, Lyft or whatever. Like, just, I was going by seeing those corporation floats. I'm like, oh.
Like, this is not even close to what you're supposed to be doing right now.
Yeah, so there's the People's Pride that happens. There's another one that's actually organized by a Black trans organization called, like, Sisters. And I want to go to that next. I want to go to that in October. That's what I'm doing.
Absolutely. Like, it. And the same thing's happening with Black Lives Matter, I think. There's, like, a consumer wave of, like, companies coming out and just, like, realizing Black people exist, maybe. I don't know.
They're like making Black Band-Aids. Yep.
Band-Aids, exactly. The Band-Aids, like,
ballerina shoes.
Yeah, like, okay, this is nice, but we've always been doing ballet and getting scrapes and cuts, so it's kind of like, what did it really take, you know, for these people to get to this point?
It's kind of nice to see, like, corporations, like, write statements about Black Lives Matter and stuff like that, but then you look underneath it and you see, like, the underbelly of it, it's like, oh.
Exactly. And you see, like, who's donating to what organizations, who's helping bail funds, and, like, when you really dig down into it, it is kind of, like, makes your stomach turn to think about, like, how corporations kind of commodify all these movements that are doing real work and making real change. It's kind of sickening a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, however, the one, like, kind of corporation that I will be happy about, like, posting a big Black Lives Matter thing is Ben & Jerry's with their statement.
Yes, they will take action for sure. Ben & Jerry's has been a great corporate ally.
they start talking about, like, white supremacy and stuff like that, not just, like, we stand by our Black employees, like, you know, here we are saying white supremacists, like, should be smashed, blah, 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 you know?
I love it.
I will buy their expensive ice cream from them.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, like, they were advocating for same-sex marriage in Australia and stuff like that. Yeah, so.
Legalization, all that good stuff. Like, they're full spectrum across the board.
They're based in Vermont, so it makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
I've been to their factory. I've seen how their ice cream is made.
Oh, cool. I love that.
You love Ben & Jerry's in this house. Yeah. Yes. So speaking of Pride Month and stuff like that, you've been selected by Teen Vogue to represent West Virginia for their 50 states of Pride. Like,
yes, absolutely. I'm so excited.
Congratulations. It's so cool. Can you tell me a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah, absolutely. So it was just a Twitter thing. You know, I was on Twitter one day and my friend in Ohio sent me a link and was like, hey, like, they're looking for applicants from these states, ages 18 to 24. Just send a short bio. And I was like, okay, cool. I never win anything, so I said, you know what, this is not going to happen, but I'll just go for it. And somehow I got an email like 5 days later, and it said, you've been chosen to represent West Virginia for 50 States of Pride. So I have like a feature in Teen Vogue basically coming up next week, actually, Monday the 22nd.
That's so exciting. Oh my God. Yes, like, what sort of stuff is like featured in it? Is it like, you know, stuff that you wrote? Like, are any of you, like, your poetry going to be featured?
Hopefully, I'm trying to integrate some of my poetry. They're looking for, like, visual art, audio, video diaries. The main focus this year is, like, what does pride mean to you, especially in these times? Which is a really, like, fervent question, I think. And I'm interested to see how my other people answer it that are featured with me. But I think that pride now especially has to mean pride in, like, everyone's aspect of humanity. So hopefully they'll let me showcase some of my poetry, because a lot of that speaks to just being human and wanting respect and needing respect really to function. So I think that this is gonna be a pretty big Vogue issue for sure.
Yeah, that's so exciting that you get to be featured in it. You get to, like, represent West Virginia that doesn't usually get, like, that kind of, like, good queer representation.
I know, and for me to be, like, a Black queer man from West Virginia, from Beckley, West Virginia, it's just, like, unheard of to get this opportunity. Usually it's like they pick people from, like, bigger cities like Charleston, Huntington, Morgantown, but, like, small town just Beckley, right here, you know, the face of West Virginia queerness.
Yes. Oh my God, that's so cool. I mean, like, most of the time when it comes to, like, West Virginia, like, in popular news outlets, it's like Eric Porterfield with his, like, racist and queerphobic comments, and, like, Jim Justice saying that he doesn't want Obama to come visit West Virginia.
It's awful. It's refreshing to see some new representation happening.
Some good news, like you representing West Virginia and Beckley from, you know, for Teen Vogue. And then Rosemary Ketchum from Wheeling just got elected to city council, first openly trans person to be elected to office in West Virginia. Like, yes!
That was huge. Like, she was everywhere. The Times, everywhere. Like, it was humongous. Huge news.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm actually having Rosemary on the show in a couple. I don't know what episode she's coming out in, but I'm actually interviewing her next week. So
that's amazing.
Yes, I'm so excited about this. It's just like it's a baby step, but we will take any step, you know.
Exactly. We'll take any of them.
Exactly. Just a little bit of progress. And also, even better, Eric Porterfield didn't even win his primary, so.
So we're just taking all the trash out, you know. Like, it's taking itself out, honestly.
Seriously. Yes. Yeah. And now, I mean, I hope that they're able to get the Crown Act passed through, like, you know, reintroduce, like, the Crown Act, and reintroduce, like, the, you know, the non-discrimination law they wanted to pass, you know, for LGBTQ people. Like, let's bring it back, guys.
I'm a huge fan of the delegate from Morgantown, Danielle Walker.
Yes, I love her, too.
I'm her Facebook friend, and she's just amazing. Like, I love her. Her politics blow me away. She's so well-spoken, so strong, so intelligent.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
I actually had her on the podcast a season ago, and I teared up during the interview. She is such, like, an emotional speaker, and I mean, she's so smart and so well spoken, and, like, she knows how to grab people's attention and just hang on to it.
Like, exactly.
There is no one like her. Like,
there really isn't.
And I mean, I admire her so much for putting herself out there. Like all the, I keep seeing her at all these different rallies, giving speeches, you know, talking to people in the audience. Right.
Yeah, she's always like at COVID testing sites, reaching out. She's making sure minority communities are staying safe, which I mean, all of that's very, very applaudable work. I think she's doing great work right now.
I just hope with, you know, I mean, one of the things that I really liked about Pride this year and like, you know, seeing all these different posts about Pride was like, you know, talking about Pride's history with the Stonewall riots, and people were like talking more about Marsha P. Johnson, Stormy DeLauvray, Sylvia Rivera, like all of those people that were there that night.
Yes. I think that like, just like social media, like you said, is just helping some people reach out and educate themselves on multiple issues. And Pride's a big one. You know, we definitely need to know the history of Pride to know what we're even celebrating or how we're celebrating. Because Pride isn't always just parades like people see. It's organizing, it's donating, uplifting LGBTQ voices, you know, all that across the board.
It's not just about like, you know, guys dancing in Speedos, you know.
Exactly. There's layers for sure. Like there's a lot of work to be done for Pride, but the first part is understanding Pride and an understanding of Marsha P. Johnson and her work and all her other activists that are surrounding her and what they did to lay the groundwork for Pride to happen and for us to have a place in the American landscape is undeniable and has to be studied to know how we're going to move forward from here.
Yeah, and like other like moments in queer history, like Compton's Cafeteria, Cooper's Donuts, that helped lay the groundwork for Stonewall to happen. Like those both happened in California, you know, mm-hmm. like led by trans people fighting against the police. It wasn't as large, big scale as Stonewall. Like Stonewall lasted, I think, about 4 or 5 days. Mm-hmm. correct me if I'm wrong, but it was a multi-day like of like protesting, fighting back, and then like Compton's and Cooper's was a little bit smaller, but still like helped set the fuse that was eventually lit that night in New York City.
Exactly. I think the history of Pride just has to be learned. Like all my years in school, I've never had like a history teacher say, "Okay, here is what Pride did for everyone else's rights in the country. Here's what Pride did to establish trans voices in the LGBT community." Like that's never really covered in history classes. So it's up to us now to educate people who want to be educated and who need to be educated about this thing.
I mean, I remember how it was taught in high school. Like I did learn about Stonewall, but it was literally one sentence in my textbook.
Right, exactly. It's just really glazed over, like, and I'm like, that's a huge American event. It was humongous.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember, well, now New Jersey has actually just passed a law in education to teach LGBTQ issues and stuff in class. Right. So that is incredible. I'm so excited about that. I'll have to ask my sister how it is because she's, you know, in school there now. Wish I had it when I was in high school as a little queer kid that didn't really know that she was queer, you know.
It would have been very helpful.
Yeah, I mean, like in school, do you ever hear about Stonewall? Or do you have to learn about that from the internet like everyone else did, like me?
Complete internet. Stonewall was never even brought up in my history classes, I'm pretty sure. We had very strict guidelines on what could be taught in my high school. The oversight kind of crushed queer history for sure, but Stonewall was all internet for me. I mean, I logged on one day and I was like, wow, like I never even heard Marsha P. Johnson's name before today. That was in like 10th grade.
So I remember we talked about like you reading some of your poetry on the podcast. Would you like to do that?
Yeah, sure. Sure, I have two poems here. Right, do you want to start whenever?
Yeah, fingers crossed that my, no one's alarm goes off or phone goes off during this time, because that would be annoying.
So the first one is Ghazal for Black Liberation. Tonight, I'm offering up another body that I'm sure you don't need. I'm offering a black boy sobbing through his fifth time watching Moonlight. I'm offering another black boy weeping at the sunrise over wilted plants and gnats hovering over his potting soil. Someone down the street from me is offering their last dollar to the night sky. Somewhere else, a black boy who used to look like me is wondering how many stars are up there and if you can ever count the same one twice. The grass is staining his stiff denim shorts now, and he's too trapped to be boy, so we call him lamb even after he's ripped from the earth. My sacrificial offering to you. Dark faces chiseled against the curvature of the moon. Bodies sparking against streetlights. Boys unfurling into the night and becoming real with the hum of an unruly breeze. There's no bread here, though. Only bodies begging to be good enough. There's no wine, either. Just black boys with blood spewing like rubies, refracting a sunset. Drops filling the cracks in tar-black roads. skin splintered and cleaned into shards of glass, too delicate to touch.
Wow. I'm sorry, that was so, like, I mean, it was so, like, that was beautiful. It was beautifully written, and, like, you know, just the imagery you used there was just, you know, I could see all of these things, and it was beautiful and tragic, and I could gush. I'm sorry. I think it's really cool.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Oh my goodness. I'm ready for whatever the next one is.
My next one is Bloom. One, I'm a collector of things. Flypaper clinging to a heat-loaded window. Bring it in. I'm never too busy being wrung dry to feed off something fleshy and new. I can't talk about the trees here, or how dogwoods used to bloom outside my window every spring, or how they always smelled like piss and dried rose petals, or like what I've been owed. I'm a collector of things. Two, I can never tell if I'm paying my dues or painting my face. Sometimes I face the sun, sometimes I bathe myself in it. I wonder if I will ever master regrowth like my grandma. I wonder if I will come back and when the earth will soften. I'm thinking about how bulbs work and how flowers can grow in concrete boxes. Following the indentions of veins down my arms, I start to see how something breaks through the dark. Three, cold steel guides the vines of the freshly bloomed rhododendrons writhing up my grandma's fence. I'm drawn in by its freedom. Its petals are pointed up, grabbing for the sun like lost children, reaching for something familiar. My grandma tells me that the bush will gain new roots and its petals will keep stretching and devouring the sun. The bricks of her foundation let paint go in the wind. The rhododendrons shake and move in subtle sweeps. We all need to be free of this strange air.
I love that last line so much. I put that on like a print or something.
Thank you so much.
Like, should all you be free of this strange air? Like, holy shit, you should, like, I mean, seriously, like, someone should make like art of that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Like that's I mean, again, beautifully written. Like,
thank you.
Poetry hits differently when you hear it out loud.
Yeah, it has a really like written and also spoken and also like hearing tone to it. Like, the quality is just all kind of intermingled. It's really pretty cool, actually.
Yeah, because there's this one poem that I really like. I Want a Dyke for President. I've read that poem like 100 times, but like, there's this one drag queen that, you know, I really admire. She puts this digital drag show together. Her name's Bitch Pudding. Yeah, I love the name, but she like, actually like lately, she's doing a lot of like activist related, like, numbers in her shows every week. So 2 weeks ago she did, I Want a Dyke for President. And like, she lip syncs to a little recording of it. And like, yeah, it was so cool. It's so different when like, you can see the person's like facial expression.
Yes.
And like, you know, hear someone else's voice. Even if it's a lip synced performance, you could still a performance.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. That's so amazing. I love that.
Like, I'd never seen like, I mean, I haven't seen too many of it. And I want to see more of it, but I have seen a few, like I've seen exactly 2 spoken word drag performances. Like, most of the time it's like music and stuff. I lip synced to music, but I've seen exactly 2 different spoken word poem numbers. And that's like Bitch Puddings, you know, doing I Want a Dyke for President. But there's also this other person, Untitled Queen, that I think they do all poetry as their performances. Like, literally they lip sync to poetry.
That's a phenomenal. I love that. That's like, that's amazing.
It was so interesting to see like drag and poetry be like mingled together. And I think I will probably always be a person that likes listening to poems rather than reading them, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I have endless poetry books, but like, I'll go to the author's YouTube and be like, okay, them doing a reading, and like, I have to listen to them read it, and then it really just like sits in my soul for a couple days.
Yeah, and like, Button Poetry on Facebook, can you follow them?
Yes.
Like,
I meet Hanif Abdurraqib actually at Marshall. He came and read, and it was amazing.
That's so cool. I follow, one of the poets, I bought her book, and I can't remember her name, and I'm really mad I can't remember. I think it's, like, Blith or something. Like, I can't remember her name right now, and I'm really annoyed, but, like, her poems, and she read them out loud, spoke to me so much that I ended up buying her book, you know? Yes.
That's usually how it goes, for like, sure.
Just, it's so good to hear poetry out loud. I can gush about that all day, like I said. And that's weird, because usually I don't really consider myself too much of, like, an audio person when it comes to, like, learning. The irony being that I have 2 podcasts of my own, but, you I don't listen to I don't listen to my podcast when I'm done editing them. That's the thing.
Exactly. Kind of, I'm more hands-on learning than anything, but like listening to my teachers read their own poetry, like read other people's poetry, it's like somehow it translates into like a written guide for me and helps me write my own poetry, which is kind of weird. I don't have to like really see it. I can just hear it and kind of envision how I think it's written and go after that style. And I think it really, that's kind of a switch up from how I usually learn, for sure.
Yeah, especially, I mean, like, well, so I love hearing the original poet read their, like, yes. You know, it's their story, it's their soul being laid bare on a piece of paper, right. Or put into the air. Like, right. That's just, I mean, they know where to inflect, they know where to emphasize, they know where to, like, you know.
It's a process, like decorating a house. It's like, if there were pause, there were to put less, there were to put more. And then once it all comes out, it's kind of like improvisational too. Like reading those poems, I had no clue how that was gonna sound, but I'm glad I did good.
You have a very good reading voice. Like it's very like you like you know like it's very like kind of calming, but it does force you to pay attention to the next words that you're saying. And it's
thank you.
Especially with how beautiful the language you use is. It's just a great read. So if you do any open mic stuff, like do it.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I am always happy to give out compliments. Yes. Well, is there anything that I forgot to ask about or anything else to talk about before we part?
I don't think so. I think I'm all good.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your artistry with us here on the podcast and, you know, for talking and taking time in your day to chat with me. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate the platform for sure.
Thank you all so much for listening. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to rate this episode and share it on social media. Sharing it and reviewing it will allow this podcast to reach a wider audience. Thank you all again for listening, and make sure you follow the podcast on social media. I'll see you all next time on Queer Mountaineers.